I'm Glenn O'Jard from News in the North, and I'd like to thank you for coming along on this internet-only deep dive. This time, we're diving into the addiction issue with Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I met Mr. Christ Tompkins in the halls of the Capitol on Thursday, and we talked about a town hall that he was planning in Sitka.
On Saturday in Sitka, the chief medical officer for the state of Alaska, Dr. Jay Butler, and myself and Andy Jones, who's heading up the opioid crisis response for the state of Alaska, will be doing a town hall with some local stakeholders in Sitka talking about the opioid crisis and also means that communities and the state as a whole can respond to the crisis. So concrete solutions and also sort of understanding how we got to where we are. And the event is inspired by similar town halls that we put on Prince of Wales Island and Petersburg in early December that had a lot of local turnout and support and resonance, and thought it would make a lot of sense to do the same in Sitka.
And why are you so passionate about this topic in particular?
I have seen a lot of lives destroyed by opioids, by these drugs. I have high school classmates who are no longer with us. It's pretty sad. It affects people from all backgrounds, from people who've always had a tough life to people who, by conventional perspective, are successful, but actually this can just take them down and destroy their life. It's an incredibly potent, powerful, life-destroying substance, and it's as bad in Alaska as really anywhere in the country. And there are a number of communities I represent in particular, and Prince of Wales comes foremost in mind, where it's particularly pronounced. And I wanted to basically connect this expertise statewide with people on a local level who are really concerned.
Do you think the opiate problem is a criminal issue, a health issue, or a little bit of both?
Definitely all of the above. And we had similar questions in the town halls. And so we're seeing legislation from the governor right now in direct response to the crisis on both the criminal and public health sides. And ideally, some of the fixes the legislature and the governor have already made are taking effect. There's actually some initial signs in the data that the problem may be stemming just a little. I mean, it's still a huge problem, but it definitely requires an all of the above approach.
And if someone in Sitka is suffering from addiction-related issues, what kind of resources are there in that town for them to get help?
Part of what the town hall and associated media going on with the town hall is to get the word out about what is possible. And so earlier this week, for instance, in Sitka, the representatives from the two community hospitals were talking about resources that they have. I mean, there's a number of approaches. You can get rid of unused prescriptions, which it's incredible if you kind of let pills sit in a pill canister. They have the tendency to disappear just because there's so many people who have this dependency, and we'll just find them one way or another, whether they're breaking into your home or they're a dinner guest and have a secret addiction, or by any other means. So, you know, that's one means. There's going to be a Narcan training in Sitka, which kind of the other end of the spectrum. If there's an overdose and someone's on the brink of death, Narcan can kind of bring them back and can be administered by anyone. And so Andy Jones is bringing a bunch of Narcan doses down from Anchorage, and we'll administer that training. And then, of course, to really solve addiction, it's a question of treatment. And unfortunately, in Alaska, there's not a lot of resources and money to try to create more treatment resources or make more treatment resources available to help people who are addicted become clean. But that is an important step. And, you know, it's a personal decision that everyone has to make. And so even with available resources, that's a really important option to consider.
Just a general question. What got you into politics?
I grew up in Sitka, and, you know, kid in Southeast Alaska, sports, activities, you travel around. I have a love for this place, and I care a lot about the people I represent and my neighbors and these communities. And I like to think that public service is a way that you care for people and make people's lives better, or try to find ways to do that. And so I've sort of been attracted to that ideal, I guess. And that's how I stumbled into this gig. It's got its highs and it's got its lows, though. So it's a mixed bag.
One thing I've noticed from watching the floor is that it seems that politicians have to be the most patient people in the world.
How do you feel about that?
That's funny you ask. I was talking with a friend here in Juneau about that just last night. And patience is important, or I'd like to think it's definitely a virtue in this line of work. Although I suppose not everyone would agree with that. I mean, I think it's important to find patience for all points of view, and sort of patience, or almost a sort of zen in not confusing disagreement and legitimate disagreement with someone being bad or evil or corrupt. And it's very easy to sort of just write off the other side by making that kind of logical leap. while it's convenient, it's almost always untrue. And so I think there's a lot of patience required to sort of unpack the complexity of disagreement. And so I think that's another reason why patience is a really important quality in this line of work. I'm sure there's a million other reasons why it's helpful. You don't always have control of your life or your schedule or other things, but just sort of roll with it as best you can. I certainly could be a more patient person myself. I try to be as patient as I can, but it's certainly an important quality.
Something I've noticed about hanging out at the Capitol is it seems like the level of acrimony is a lot less than at least what is being projected from the national news. Can you speak to that and maybe how you're working with people across the aisle?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great observation and accurate too. I mean, just before this interview, I was talking with a Republican legislator from the MATSU. And before that, the committee that I chair, we heard a piece of legislation from another Republican legislator from the MATSU. I mean, I personally think of myself as practically a nonpartisan person, or at least that's how I aspire to serve in public office. And I mean, there's varying degrees. I mean, some people have different perspectives. But in general, though, I think there actually is a level of amiability, people getting along here, that would kind of be hard to tell sometimes from the headlines, from the social media, from the memes, from the stories that come out of the Capitol. It'd be interesting to diagnose why that's the case. Unfortunately, I think to some extent, when that content, when that perception gets out there, it becomes to some extent a self-fulfilling prophecy too, and that the acrimony is expected. And even though I still don't think there's a lot of it here, what degree does exist, I wonder if all of it would exist if there wasn't such an expectation that, you know, people are at each other's throats and the, you know, the verbs and headlines are vivid, like battles and wars with the other party. And I mean, this like, it just kind of puts you in a headspace that I think is unfortunate. I think it's a good observation. I think it's true. And I kind of wish the word were out there more.
Well, I will definitely work to get the word out there. Is there anything on the slate that you're really interested in for this session?
I mean, one of the biggest issues I care about this session is balancing Alaska's budget. And we're running this huge budget deficit and we're spending down our savings account. We had $16 billion in the bank 5 years ago. We have $2 billion in the bank today. It's going to be at zero before the end of the year. And it's phenomenally short-sighted. And it's so unfortunate that what has happened the last 5 years has happened, and what is happening, present tense, that we are continuing on this path. And the reason we're continuing on this path is it's a lot easier, frankly, politically, to spend down savings and kind of kick the can down the road than confront the problem. And confronting the problem is a combination of cutting the budget and cutting services that we enjoy and appreciate, which has already happened to some extent, but arguably needs to further happen. And taxes and paying money too. And there's just no mathematical way to balance the budget without really both of those things happening in conjunction with a permanent fund restructure. There's just no mathematical way to balance the budget. And unfortunately, that hard reality has not been confronted. And it's unfortunately kind of shortchanged future generations by spending down the amount of savings that we've already spent down.
Do you have hope that you're going to be able to tackle this issue? Because I know it's an election year and maybe people aren't interested in dealing with that.
I have hope, realistic hope, which is, I mean, I think it's important never to lose a mindset of optimism and at least a sense of possibility, but it's certainly calibrated to what I think is realistic. And unfortunately, I don't think it's overwhelmingly realistic that the legislature will act. And I think it's important to sort of identify where people stand. The Senate in particular will act. So the House last year passed a fully balanced budget that included a flat operating budget, an income tax, and a restructure of the permanent fund. And none of those three things are pleasant, but at least a majority of us voted for it because we felt it was necessary. And it passed and it went over to the Senate and the Senate voted it down, which they have every right to do. But I mean, if you believe in a balanced budget, or at least I believe in a balanced budget, we have to make those choices. And the Senate thus far has a different perspective. And that may be legitimate, although I really have a lot of concern with spending down savings. For me, it's a really difficult thing to do. So I guess, yeah, different schools of thought.
What happens when Alaska spends all their savings?
It's a good question. We'll get to zero this year in our primary savings account. And this is where things are really unfortunate. There's another account after this one that can start to be spent down. And that's what is likely to happen. And so it's just more sort of short-term expediency at the cost of long-term financial solvency. That's what's likely to happen.
And then my last question, if you could be remembered for anything in politics, what would you want your legacy to be?
Great question. I would aspire to a reputation of statesmanship and putting community and Alaska before any affiliations, including party or anything else. And I think that's what statesmanship is in my mind, at least as sort of popularly conceived. And, you know, unfortunately, I feel like the political climate is, I mean, I'm not that old, so I've only read in history books, you know, what things used to be like. And perhaps things are made to sound a little nicer in history than they might have been at the time. Who really knows? Certainly, those ideals of statesmanship in which people who disagree are able to compromise, they're able to come together, they can communicate well, they respect each other. That is, if you can call it a legacy, it's certainly a reputation that I would like to serve in, you know, however many years I'm in office, to that ideal.
Okay, thank you so much for this interview. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, thank you very much for intercepting me in the hallway.
I'd like to thank State Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins for his time and thought. And I'd like to thank you, too, for coming along on this internet-only deep dive. My name's Glenn Ojard from News of the North. Free to see every story, every day at KINYRadio.com.